Simon Cowell calls her the bravest woman he's ever met. You're joining Mark Masri and Laura Watson on the 100 Huntley Street podcast. And right now we're going to talk about Ketchy Okuchi. She's an author, speaker, and a singer, and an incredibly inspiring woman.
That is amazing to hear someone like Simon Cowell talk about her bravery and courage. And yes, indeed, she comes by that acknowledgement. Honestly, Laura, what a story. Involved in a tragic plane crash at the age of 16. 107 perished, only two survived. She was one of two. And her story obviously doesn't end there. She is with us. You've spoken with her. You've talked about her book. And the challenges that she's faced since that accident have been quite possibly as bad as the accident itself.
Well, very life-altering, right? And, you know, her book is titled More Than My Scars. She has experienced such intense scarring across her entire body. And it's been a journey. That's a journey in itself, the pain, the recovery, as well as rediscovering her identity. And we can't even imagine the layers of that, right? But we can imagine how hard it would be to figure out who you are again on the other side of that. And, you know, something else for Ketchy is that she lost 60 schoolmates. And they were friends. They were all friendly faces she'd been doing life with every day for years.
And they were heading home for break.
Yeah, that's right, from their boarding school.
Yeah, just a fascinating story.
Yeah.
And I'm sure tons of questions.
Oh.
Like, she must have asked God a lot of the hard questions in terms of why? Why did this happen? Mm-hmm. Why was I the one to survive? Who am I now with the scars that cover 60% of my body?
Yeah.
And your conversation is very inspiring because there's so much hope in her in what she has to share, mm-hmm. and how her perspective on life has changed, and her perspective of, you know, concerning the accident and the scars on her body, how much that's built her up in character and given her a fresh new perspective. I don't think we should wait any longer. We don't want to give any more of the interview away. It's so good. So let's go to you, Laura, with Ketchy Okuchi.
My next guest is a walking miracle. Nigerian-American recording artist, speaker, and author Ketchy Okuchi joins us now to talk about her inspiring story and her new book, More Than My Scars, The Power of Perseverance, Unrelenting Faith, and Deciding What Defines You. Welcome to 100 Huntley Street, Ketchy.
Thank you for having me, you guys. Honored to be here.
It is our pleasure. Oh, Ketchy, you have such an incredibly inspiring story. But to get the breadth and width of it, can we go back to where your story began to take such a turn on December 10th, 2005?
Yes. So December 10th, 2005, I was 16 years old. I was in Nigeria, which is where I was born and raised. Mm-hmm. And I was a high school student. I was actually a senior in high school. And that day was a Saturday. It was the final day of the fall semester of 2005, and we were heading home for the Christmas holidays. So when I say we, I mean myself and 60 other students from my high school. Okay. I went to a boarding high school. So to get home, we typically have to fly. We fly from, because the school is in a different state from where we live. And so the school groups students who live together to travel together. Mm-hmm. So this is the same group of kids that I typically travel with beginning of the semester and the end. So it was nothing unusual to be on the flight that day or to fly just in general. So that day was a regular Saturday. I remember it just being a very normal day. I don't remember anything weird. I remember we left the school campus on the school buses. We got to the airport. We boarded the plane eventually. And there were 109 passengers in total. So it was 61 students from my school, including myself and other random passengers. It was a regular commercial flight, including the flight crew. So the plane took off. Everything was fine. The journey is typically an hour and a half. And I remember for most of it, it was very uneventful, just like any regular flight should be. And then the turbulence started when we started descending, you know, when the pilot makes the announcement that we will start the descent, that's when the turbulence started. And again, at this point, there was nothing to be worried about because turbulence is a part of flying. It's not a big deal. But then this one just started to get really bad and just very, very dramatic and exaggerated. And I just remember the tension rising, you know, in the cabin, and no one was saying a word because, you know, no one wanted to be the one to say what we were all thinking. because it felt like something was going wrong. And that's the scariest thing to contemplate when you're like in the air. And then a woman from the back of the plane just kind of screamed. And I remember that was when like the chaos just ensued. It wasn't like anyone was running around or anything or strapped in, but like people started screaming, like crying out to God, praying at the top of their lungs and just shouting Holy Spirit, shouting Jesus. And I remember just sitting there in my seat, like just confused and shocked because I couldn't quite understand that this was reality. You know, this is the kind of thing you see in movies. It just felt so surreal in that moment. I was in an aisle seat, and on the aisle seat next to mine was one of my best friends. And my last memory in that plane is holding her hand. And I remember just waiting for whatever was going to happen. And then there was this loud metal scraping sound that kind of like jars your brain. Like, you know, like it's like inside your head. And then darkness. It was just dark. Just at that point, I'm guessing that was impact. But then my most vivid memory after that is opening my eyes, and I was horizontal in the hospital bed, and 5 weeks had passed, and I was waking up from a coma in South Africa, in a hospital in South Africa. And that was pretty much the beginning of a whole different kind of life. You know, I learned that I sustained third-degree burns over 65% of my body, which just means that everything from my head to my feet burned except for my torso. And thus began my journey as a burn survivor.
And Ketchy, I know in your book you detail the extreme and immense physical pain, the emotional pain that you journeyed through in that time. And, you know, you also detail just the presence of your mom and the presence of your mom reading the Bible to you, encouraging you, mm-hmm. Sharing about God with you. What difference did your mom make for you in that season?
She, for a very long time after the accident, she was my reason, period. You know, just for choosing life, for choosing to fight to stay alive, for choosing to open my eyes every morning. She was the reason I did all those things. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it was really because of her. You know, I knew that she could not handle, you know, thinking she lost me and then seeing me alive and then losing me again. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't let her kind of go through that entire process again. So I had to fight to stay alive because of that. That was one. And then another thing was for me to get, like, my will to survive was very, very low in the beginning. And I kind of relied on her presence and the promise of seeing her every time I opened my eyes to stay alive. So in the beginning, she was really my reason for everything. My dad will attest to this because he knows and knew how attached I was to her even before the accident. So that obviously informed how things went after. Mm-hmm. She was a very irreplaceable force in my life. Mm-hmm. I needed her. Like, I've never needed anything as much as I needed her in that moment, in those moments. And she was quite literally there for me and was my rock from the get-go and has not stopped being by my side since then. Mm-hmm. But it was so important for me to have her in those beginning times because I needed a reason to hold on, and she really was it.
Yes, she certainly was. You know, it's incredible to read the journey that you two had together. One of the wise things, you know, I really believe I'm a mom, but that your mom did for you in that season, you know, she held back the truth of the impact of the accident. So she let you, you know, believe and on advice of counselors, right, so that your resilience would stay high, exactly. That everyone had survived the accident. But the reality is, you know, 107 people had perished and 60 of those people were your friends.
Yeah.
And eventually they had to tell you. And in that moment when, you know, 4 or 5 months out of your, as you're waking up and you've recovered now, in that moment of finding out the actual depth of the loss of that accident, what was that like?
It was completely life-changing. Like, as if I was not already currently living in a life-changing moment. It was like my whole world had once again turned upside down because it was not at all what I expected. Like, this was not what I thought was the reality. Mm-hmm. Up until that moment, I thought everyone was alive, except maybe one person who I had been, like, in the beginning, they kind of tested the waters and told me that one person, you know, didn't make it. And that broke me so much that I guess at that point, they realized I was not ready for the truth of the entire situation. Mm-hmm. So when they eventually told me, I just was confused, because I thought up until that point that I had gotten the worst of it among everyone that else that survived, which is everyone. I thought I was just one of the worst cases where I was really badly hurt and I was in the hospital. But like most of every, like, I just assumed most people were banged up, but like they were okay. I even thought my friends were back in school. Like, I was so sure, because who survives a plane crash? Like, if one person is alive, then it couldn't have been that bad. That means most people, that means it was like just a, like it was like a, like the plane crash landed as opposed to crashing from the air. So I really thought like I was just one of the most hurt people out of that accident. Realizing the truth just kind of shifted my perspective entirely, because up until that point, I really was also getting to a place where I was starting to feel sorry for myself and feeling kind of left out of like the world and left out by like my friends moving on with life and with school and, you know, being seniors, going to prom, things like that. So like my entire perspective changed, because I realized, contrary to what I thought about being in the worst situation, I was ironically actually in the like the best case scenario, because no one else survived. Just two people survived this. So even though I was so hurt and in so much pain, this was actually the best case scenario, because the other scenario was literally death. And I think for me, that was the most important thing to realize, because it helped me to realize that, you know, this is actually like, it helped me to kind of grasp the miracle that my life really was. Mm-hmm. And to stop feeling sorry for myself, to stop feeling like, you know, the world is out to get me or something, you know, like, why would this happen to me? It was just more like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. I had to now consider the amount of loss that everyone was going through. You know, all these parents of all these kids who had been reaching out to me all these months, praying for me and making sure I was okay. Now I realized they had lost their kids. Mm. And so it made their like communication with me that much more meaningful, because I could now see, mm-hmm, from their eyes, you know, they lost their kids, but to them, they felt like my life was one good thing, mm-hmm, that came out of this. So they were holding on to it just as much as my family and I was. Mm-hmm. So, oh my God, perspective in every way just completely shifted. Mm-hmm. But I think the main thing for me was also faith. It was like, that was the most important moment for me to kind of understand what God really was going to mean to me. Mm-hmm. Because up until that point, I was learning a lot of things about him that were great, and this was not adding up. So I had a lot of conversations with my mom, with my family about how to kind of adjust my perspective on God and stop seeing him as just like this, you know, problem solver, you know, you asking for something like a transaction and he gives it to you. And, you know, being a Christian, thinking it exempts you from like, you know, bad things happening to you, that's not reality, you know, and God is actually who you go to when bad things happen. He's not the cause of the bad things, you know? So just a lot of perspective changes, really, just born from that one realization, I think. And yeah, that's pretty much, I think, how it just kind of changed my entire world.
So important to have a perspective in such suffering and difficulty, Ketchy, and to use a perspective to inspire hope in others. And, you know, I know your perspective began to shift as well as you were able to see yourself for the first time after all of the surgeries you'd had. And it was really interesting in your book to read your response to the first time you looked in the mirror, the initial... Yeah. Experience. Will you share that with us?
Definitely. That was another very defining moment for me, because this was less about faith and more about identity, kind of understanding what role my scars were going to play in my life moving forward. You know, how important, what level of importance I was going to give them, and how much I was going to allow my new appearance, you know, kind of dictate my life henceforth. So all that stemmed from that moment I saw my reflection for the first time. This was about 3-4 months in to my treatment in South Africa. And I remember I just started getting curious, because I could tell from the bandages on my body and my head that like things were really bad. And there was just no way my face was not affected. So I started getting more and more curious. And I think the curiosity kind of peaked when I kind of I just caught like a little shot of myself in the phone screen that my mom handed to me one morning when I was talking to my dad. And as she took the phone away, I kind of saw my eyes and I was like, oh, and it just kind of made me see a little bit of like, just a very tiny glimpse of like what my new face was gonna be like. So I kind of asked her like, you know, I feel like I want to see how I look, you know, and I think she'd been dreading that moment because, you know, she knew that it would be like, it would shake me, you know, but she just didn't know how much it would shake me. And honestly, I didn't know either because up until that moment, you know, I was very used to being very pretty and that was just my reality. And I liked it and I liked the attention from it and I liked the confidence that it gave me. So knowing that my face was probably different now, I was worried about how that would change my perspective of myself. Mm-hmm. I was worried about how it would change my attitude, you know, mm-hmm. my personality. Because up until that point, I thought a lot of who I was came from how I looked. Mm-hmm. So like the next day I saw myself, my mom brought the mirror and I looked at my reflection. And I remember my first thought was, my God, everything is so like pink and like red. And that's just because I literally had no skin on my face. It was just skinless and just like everything was just so raw looking. And it was a far cry from what I remembered looking like, mm-hmm. far cry. But I remember also the weird thing in that moment was like, before I could get to, like, I wasn't so focused on like the difference before I was like very focused on the familiar, on the similar. Like my mind immediately kind of shifted from what was different to what was the same. And I could see that my eyes were there. My eyes were pretty much the same. My lips were there, you know, and the arrangement of my face was pretty much the same, just scarred and different now. And even though this person was not really looking like Catchy that like I remembered, there was still a familiarity in that reflection that obviously didn't stem from the physical appearance. Yes. It was just kind of a feeling. And I think that was the moment that gave birth to what has become my life mantra, really. Because I realized in that moment, like, if I'm still feeling like Catchy, even though I don't look like Catchy, then whatever makes me Catchy obviously goes beyond just what you can see on the outside. And so that means that essence of who I am, it's something that comes out from inside me and projects outward. Yeah. So that essence doesn't have to change even though the exterior changes. Mm-hmm. And that was really the birth of my scars not define me, because they quite literally obviously didn't. Mm-hmm. They were a part of me, you know, and they will forever be, but I didn't have to allow it to become my entire identity. Mm-hmm. And that realization was so significant for me because it freed me mm-hmm. in such an incredible way. I didn't have to change the kind of jokes I laugh at. I didn't have to change my personality or my sense of humor. I didn't have to change how I like to dress and, you know, cover up my scars, you know, because it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Those things, those physical things didn't have anything to do with the things that made me who I was. Mm-hmm. And I felt like if I lived that way, and this is something that exhibited itself down the line after I left the hospital, but mm-hmm. when I just realized it was the right way to live, because when I presented that like myself, just as I am to people, after they get the shock of like seeing how I look, they can get beyond that because I'm just acting like me. And I feel like that's the role that I play in helping people kind of overcome the shock of seeing how I look, especially in the beginning, because now I look a little better. But I feel like I was able to kind of bridge that gap of like, you know, making them feel kind of like, I don't know how to handle her. How do I talk to her? And then they can just immediately see after talking to me that I'm just like any other person, even though I look a little different. Mm-hmm. So I think that moment of seeing my reflection gave birth to all these different things, you know, and, I'm very grateful for that perspective. It's definitely a God thing. Can't explain it any other way. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for me to see myself this way and not to like, you know, immediately, you know, focus on the like negative stuff. I feel like God just gave me that as a gift so that I could, you know, just live my life without worrying about all that stuff, you know, so.
Well, Catchy, and you know, that's the heart of your book, right? You know, it's to encourage people to not be defined on what's the, you know, the outside or success, but also, you know, I see a big message for you, from you, for people who've experienced trauma or loss or incredible suffering, because sometimes those, you know, those crosses that we bear start to define us. And you're saying, no,
No, that should not define you. So for those who are watching right now who are going through pain or suffering, loss, trauma, Ketchy, what do you want to say to them?
To anyone who has gone through trauma, whether it's trauma that's as visible as mine or is invisible, because, you know, invisible trauma is still as valid, I would say that I understand. I totally understand how difficult it is to not allow something that has affected you so deeply to define everything that you do. Mm-hmm. But from my experience, and, you know, I can only talk to you based on my experience with trauma. From my experience, it is possible for you to, rather than see this trauma as something that cripples you, mm-hmm. it can be a source of strength for you. Mm-hmm. For me, it was something that allowed me to kind of develop a new purpose. What I mean is, after going through what I went through, you know, these scars and then the loss of all those lives and everything, I decided that I would use what has affected me, what has happened to me, to kind of show people that it's possible to live life, to thrive even after trauma, that there is life after trauma, and it doesn't have to be a life defined by that trauma. So I wanted to be that example, not just to say the words, but to show people in the way that I'm living my life that it is possible to live a life that is not defined by your trauma. Now, this does not mean that you cannot, you know, kind of take what you've gone through to help another person. That's a whole different way of, like, you know, of handling trauma. And I know a lot of people who have done that, including myself, mm-hmm. you know, people who have taken what they've gone through and try to use it as a teaching point for other people mm-hmm. so that either they don't go through what you've gone through, or you can teach them how to go through what you've gone through, because it's so similar. Mm-hmm. But I feel like also a lot of times when you try to draw strength from what you've gone through, it ends up leading you to a purpose that you may have never thought you had. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened for me, mm-hmm. you know, living my life for not just myself, but for all those who passed away, especially my friends, mm-hmm. and most especially for the parents of those kids that passed away, has led me to so many different places that I could never have imagined, including whether it's school, graduating, working, going on America's Got Talent, traveling, singing. I mean, I feel like all these things stem from the fact that my life became this kind of like a testimony, really, for everyone else that passed away. And I wanted to live for them and make them proud. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's one perspective you can take on, like, you know, personal trauma. Mm-hmm. But another perspective is always to also understand that your life after trauma does not have to be one that's defined by it. Mm-hmm. It does not have mm-hmm. to be one that makes you hide away from the world, but it can be one where you keep living your life despite what you've gone through. Mm. And just by doing that, you have no idea the amount of people you can impact, because just doing that shows everyone else that it's possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the best best advice I can give you, really, because, I mean, no one knows what you're going through except you. Mm. But I think that the way that you go through it, you know, makes all the difference. So I encourage you mm-hmm. to draw strength from your tragedy, from your trauma, and maybe possibly you'll encounter your purpose there too. Mm.
It really reminds me of that Bible verse, Ketchy, what you're saying, Romans 8:28, that God can work all things together for our good. And it's a hard journey though, and it's a hard journey what you've gone through. I'm so excited to see where God has taken you. And of course, America's Got Talent. Yes, Simon Cowell called you one of the bravest women he's ever met generally, but also your voice is so beautiful. And I can't let this conversation end without asking you, are you recording new music right now? What is on the horizon for you musically?
Oh my gosh. So thank you for asking. I am actually working on, like, I want to say it's an EP, but it's a Christian, like, EP. I really want to, I feel like that's where my voice shines the brightest, when I'm singing for God, singing to God, because that's just the kind of music that I personally relate to the most. So while I have dabbled in different genres, just because I love music, regardless of the genre, I do feel more in tune with Christian contemporary or just Christian music, inspirational music. So I am currently working on a short album, like just an extended play album for, like, maybe 5 or 6 Christian songs that are all original, and that most importantly, I wrote, because I have never really dabbled in songwriting until like after America's Got Talent. I didn't think I had any kind of talent for it. But when it comes to Christian music, it's a little easier, I think, especially because I believe what I'm writing, you know? So I'm really looking forward to it. I actually just finished recording the first one. Well, not just, like a couple months ago. And then I have another one that I'm going to start recording in October because my producer traveled. Like, he had like a gig outside the country. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it would be really cool to like one day hear my like song on KSBJ or something. Okay. So I'm working towards that. But until then, I have music that's out on all platforms right now. Just type Catchy, you'll find me. And I hope you enjoy what you hear.
Well, I'm sure we will. And it'd be nice to have you one day here on our set singing some music.
Yes.
And Catchy, love that. Your book, More Than My Scars, I can't encourage our viewers enough to get their hands on it and read it. It's such an encouragement. Oh my goodness, no matter what you are facing and as we journey through this life. Catchy, your story is so remarkable, and your resilience and your courage and your spirit has been such a blessing to us today. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, of all the profound things that Catchy said in that interview, Lara, one of the most profound things she said was at the very end, she said, we can use our trauma to impact others. Wow.
Yeah.
What maturity, what depth.
Yes, what depth is so true. I mean, understanding that the things we go through can be used for good in the end. I mean, that's a biblical principle, Romans 8:28. That's a Bible verse. God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And Catchy actually writes that verse in the book. So this is a big part of her life and her faith. But you know, there are some studies, Mark, that say people who find a reason behind what they've suffered. So sometimes somebody who's experienced a loss, but then starts a foundation for those who've experienced a similar loss, come out the other side more resilient and have stronger mental health. And I remember that study really impacting me. Now I'm listening to Catchy talk with me and I'm like, here I'm seeing it in the flesh. This is the truth. When we let our trauma not just become the thing that defines us negatively, but it's the thing that we say, you know what, I know how to journey through this. I know how to encourage others through such and such. It is life-changing. And what a purpose we get. Our pain becomes purpose.
Absolutely. And you know, so often, like I know for myself, I can use all the things that are going wrong as an excuse for my lack of effectiveness. You know, like I'm not being effective because of A, B, C, D, E. You can turn that around. And she talks again about making a choice to not feel sorry for herself anymore and move forward and get past the, you know, all the physical stuff that she was going through and the emotional stuff to turn it around for good. And it's interesting because studies show that, you know, our brain can't do these two things at the same time. We can't complain and we can't wallow in despair and also be thankful
Isn't
at the same
amazing?
Time. Isn't that interesting? We can only do one or the other. So if you choose to do the other one, focus on the things that you have to be thankful for. Breath in your lungs. In Catchy's situation in her life, it was the fact that she was still alive. She was one of two survivors of 109 passengers on that plane. So that was reason for her to give God thanks. The fact that she could still breathe, she could take nourishment, she could learn to live life as a burn victim, but go on and have an incredible career as a writer, as an artist. I mean, she was on America's Got Talent. I mean, she had made an impression on Simon Cowell.
Yes, like, she got to the final rounds. I mean, they were, and her voice is incredible. This is interesting too, Mark. In her book, she talks about how when she was younger, growing up in Nigeria, you know, they were very much coached to choose very realistic careers. Mm-hmm. So it's like go into finance, you know, go into law, go very, right? But she actually felt really drawn to singing and to writing. And so actually this whole experience led her to find those dreams again. The experience of, you know, she started singing when she was bedridden. That's what she was doing. And now she's writing and now she's speaking. And so those dreams that God had put in her heart that her parents said, well, you've got to pick something more realistic, end up becoming the things that she's doing today.
Yeah. Go figure, right?
Really?
We just can't limit God. And so I think the point of today's show today, folks, if you're listening, is that we are more than the obstacles that we face and the trials that we have to overcome, whether it's a physical disability, an emotional thing that we're going through, any of our own shortcomings, failures, in Catchy's case, her scars or the pain that she suffered through, the emotional trauma of being a crash victim. Mm. We have to go back to who God says we are. We have to get the right perspective on our identity. And we can overcome. And who does God say we are, Laura? He says we're chosen.
Yes.
We're not forsaken. We're his beloved, which is a beautiful picture. We're his beloved. Like, that's
we're
just
his
like
children.
We're his children. We're overcomers. We're the righteousness of Christ. We're friends of God. We're a new creation. We're the head, not the tail. I mean, if that's not enough to get you excited, I don't know what does.
I mean, this is so cool that you're even saying that, Mark, because this morning I wrote a whole list like that.
Did you?
Who does God say I am? Yeah.
Maybe I read your mail. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't. That's a God thing.
But that's a God thing. And, you know, sometimes we have to remind ourselves, because when things are getting tough, it's like, you know, whatever you might see as the thing labeling you or being over you. And this is a, you know, the reality is life is hard. So it could be anything. Mm-hmm. It literally could be. And, you know, remembering that you are God's chosen beloved, you're his child. I mean, you're those things first before you are the person who made the mistake or did this or, you know, had this happen to you, whatever it might be. I remember being younger in my faith, and people would say that to me, like, you know, they'd list who they are in God and who they are in Christ. And I'd say, like, well, that's neat. Now that I'm getting older and I'm having more, I'm like, I need to do that every day.
Yes. No, I know. And for, like, for some of you listeners, maybe you're stuck, you know, and it happens. We all will go through seasons of our lives where we get stuck, and you need help moving past the hurt and the pain or the labels or your scars, whatever they are, whether physical or otherwise. I find prayer is one of the most powerful ways to get over, to get past those seasons in my life. And that's why we have prayer partners available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't matter what time of the day of the week. It could be Christmas Day at 3 a.m. and you need to talk to someone. You need someone to pray with you, to help move you past the place that you find yourself in. We want you to know that they are there for you. They're there for you right now. So call this number. I'm going to give it to you. I'll give it to you a couple of times so you can write it down. 1-866-273-4444. 1-866-273-4444. Or if you're more comfortable sending us an email, you can do that at prayer@crossroads.ca. We also have amazing digital pastors online. You can go to the chat icon on the crossroads.ca page, and someone will encourage you in your faith there and help pray you through whatever it is you're facing.
Yeah, so important. You know, in praying together, you'd be amazed at how often as our team, we'll look at each other and say, will you pray with me? Let's pray right now. So 100%. There's power in communal prayer, joining together in prayer. Well, I'm so thankful that we've had this time together, joined together, all of us listening in and learning from Catchy. So many great points about life and how to be hopeful and resilient and overcome no matter what we face.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, you've been listening to the 100 Huntley Street podcast with your hosts, Laura Watson and Mark Masri, and we look forward to joining you again real soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for your ongoing support of Crossroads, a supporter-funded nonprofit organization and member of the Canadian Center of Christian Charities. Thanks to faithful people like you, we are able to continue producing 100 Huntley Street. You can write to Crossroads, P.O. Box 5100, Burlington, Ontario, L7R4M2, or visit crossroads.ca to learn more about our programs.